do you reckon it would have been like to be a free black man while people all around were still practicing slavery? To grow up free, but to see your own people being used, bought, sold, and brutally treated as property, as even less than animals? Let me tell you how Benjamin Banneker grew up, a free black man, in the 1700s. Although there is much we don't know about Benjamin, and some historians disagree on his background, we do know that he embodied true American spirit with his survey work in the capital city, his championing of the cause of abolition, and his innovative contributions to science. I will share what I found through my research of the best evidence available. His story most likely begins with an orphaned English girl shipped to the Americas from England as an indentured servant. Her name was Molly Welsh, and she spent 7 years working on a farm in Maryland to earn her freedom, just as many colonists of all races and countries of origin did in the early days of the colonies. Upon being released from servitude and armed with determination and her hard-earned knowledge of farming, she bought some land near Baltimore and 2 slaves to help her work it. After only a few years, she freed her slaves and married one of them, named Banca, and they had 4 daughters together. It is believed that Banca was a prince in his home country, the son of an African king. No one is sure exactly which country Banca had come from, but some evidence suggests that he may have belonged to the Dogon people, a people known for their advanced technical knowledge in irrigation, farming, and accurately charting the stars. His princely personality may have kept him from doing too much manual labor, but Banca had a remarkable knack for hunting, which kept the family well fed, and for predicting the weather, which ensured that their crops were the envy of all their neighbors. The eldest of Molly and Banca's daughters, Mary, described as having uncommon intelligence, soon married a freed slave named Robert. Some say that Molly purchased his freedom so that he could marry her daughter. Others say that his owner, impressed with his spirit and his desire to become a Christian, freed him upon his baptism. Robert did not have a last name, so he took Mary's last name, which was changed to Banneke and later to Banneker. Mary and Robert helped on the family farm, raising tobacco. They also raised 4 children of their own, the eldest of which was Benjamin, born in 1731. These were happy and active times on the family farm. The Bannekers certainly had an unusual and engaging story due to the mixture of many heritages and traditions. Molly, with her customs from English country life. Robert and Banca relaying tales of rich African folklore and the new conventions of the family's adopted colonial American life. Eventually, Benjamin's father bought 100 acres just outside of Baltimore to begin his own tobacco farm. Molly taught Benjamin to read from the family Bible. Even when he was a child, people thought there was something unique about Benjamin. He had a quiet dignity about him and spoke as an educated and respectful adult would. When he was 6 years old, neighboring farmers, both black and white, began asking him to check their calculations on finances, and they were astonished to discover that he could, at a later date, recall and discuss the exact figures. A Quaker school opened near their home, and even though it was only open during the winter months so children could help on their family's farms, Benjamin was excited to attend. Because the Quakers held strong beliefs about equality, Benjamin attended with both white and black children. During the months when school was not in session, he borrowed textbooks from his teacher and studied every chance he could. A classmate later said of Benjamin, "All his delight was to dive into his books. However, he never actually owned a book of his own until he was 32 years old." When Benjamin was 22, he borrowed a watch, carefully took it apart, sketched all the working parts, and then proceeded to make his own clock. Each piece he mathematically sized. Then he carefully, expertly whittled out of wood each delicate, intricate part to create a working clock that struck the hour perfectly on time for years. It was not commonplace in 18th century Maryland to own a clock, so Benjamin hosted many visitors who came to see his handmade clock. When Benjamin was 28 years old, his father died, leaving him the 100-acre farm. He lived there with his mother and sisters. In 1772, when Benjamin was 41 years old, the Ellicott family bought property next to Benjamin's. They were Quakers in the business of building and running grist mills. They became Benjamin's friends, especially George Ellicott, who was nearly 30 years his junior. George had a telescope and books on astronomy that he let Benjamin borrow. Benjamin became fascinated with the study of stars. He delved into astronomy and became so adept at calculations that one wonders if he inherited the abilities of his grandfather's people in Africa. Night after night, he would lie outside, wrapped in a blanket, watching the stars from dusk to dawn, recording his observations. In 1789, he correctly predicted a solar eclipse. In 1790, he calculated and wrote an ephemeris, which tells the positions of heavenly bodies for the year 1791, but was unsuccessful in finding someone to publish it. He decided to write an almanac of his own in which to publish an ephemeris. Now, let me explain to you the significance of almanacs in Benjamin's day. For most households, books and newspapers were luxuries that few were able to buy. If a family owned a book, it was likely a Bible. Most people, however, purchased almanacs, especially the farmers, who made up a high percentage of the population then. Almanacs contained vital information about seasons and storm predictions, when to plant, dates of eclipses and tide tables. Readers were also entertained with poetry and stories, and inspired by scripture verses and thought-provoking quotes. Benjamin Franklin had been a highly successful writer of almanacs. But where Benjamin Franklin likely borrowed or hired out his astronomical and meteorological information, Banneker made his own calculations. He and Franklin were quite similar in that they were brilliant in many subjects, which made for remarkably interesting and useful almanacs. Included in Banneker's almanacs were bold arguments against slavery, which abolitionist publishers were quick to distribute. Benjamin's desire to publish grew from his deep desire to stimulate, in his words, the cause of humanity, as many are of opinion that blacks are void of mental endowments. He knew that he and his accomplishments bore proof that black people were every bit as capable of achievement as their white counterparts. Before finishing his almanac, his young friend George Ellicott recruited Benjamin's help in a surveying project for the new capital city, Washington, D.C., as part of a team that had been commissioned by President George Washington. It was the first time Benjamin had traveled more than 10 miles from his farm in Maryland. This was an extremely important project. It was the laying out of the new federal city, which would include the White House as well as the Capitol building. Benjamin knew so much about astronomy by then that his skills and knowledge were considered a great asset. In the frigid February winter, he stayed in a tent with a hole in the top so that he could observe the stars. He had a regulator clock in his tent that he maintained with a set of thermometers. Each day, he set his watch to the regulator clock and then kept track of the time it took for the stars to move from one point to another, an important piece of his calculations. He also used a piece of surveying equipment called a transit and equal altitude instrument to establish latitude. He was paid $2 a day, which was the standard pay for an assistant surveyor in the year 1791. Benjamin stayed on the project from February to April 1791, when he returned home to work on his almanac. he created an entire almanac and ephemeris for the following year. When he finished, very proud of his work, he set out to find a publisher. After submitting it to several printers to no avail, he decided to reach out to the Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson. Benjamin wanted more from Jefferson than just an endorsement of his almanac. An active abolitionist, Banneker wanted the Secretary of State to have a clear understanding of his thoughts on slavery. "Sir, I am fully sensible of the greatness of that freedom which I take on the present occasion, a liberty which seemed to me scarcely allowable when I reflected on that distinguished and honorable station in which you stand. Sir, suffer me to recall to your mind that time in which the arms and tyranny of the British Crown were exerted with every powerful effect in order to reduce you to a state of servitude. Look back, I entreat you, on the variety of dangers to which you were exposed. Reflect on that time in which every human aid appeared unavailable, and in which even hope and fortitude wore the aspect of inability to the conflict. And you cannot but be led to a serious and grateful sense of your miraculous and providential preservation. You cannot but acknowledge that the present freedom and tranquility which you enjoy, you have mercifully received, and that it is the particular blessing of heaven. This, sir, was a time in which you clearly saw into the injustice of a state of slavery, and in which you had just apprehensions of the horrors of its condition. It was now, sir, that your abhorrence therefore was so excited that you publicly held forth this true and invaluable doctrine, which is worthy to be recorded and remembered in all succeeding ages. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Jefferson not only read the letter, he replied promptly and benevolently, "Sir, I thank you for your letter and for the almanac it contained. Nobody wishes more than I do to see such proofs as you exhibit that nature has given to our black brethren talents equal to those of the other colors of men, and that the appearance of a want of them is owing merely to the degraded condition of their existence both in Africa and America. I can add with truth that nobody wishes more ardently to see a good system commenced for raising the condition both of their body and mind to what it ought to be, as fast as the imbecility of their present existence and other circumstances which cannot be neglected will admit. I have taken the liberty of sending your almanac to Monsieur Condorcet, Secretary of the Academy of Sciences at Paris and member of the Philanthropic Society, because I considered it as a document to which your whole color had a right for their justification against the doubts which have been entertained of them. I am, with great esteem, sir, your most obedient, humble servant, Thomas Jefferson." In his letter to Monsieur Condorcet, Thomas Jefferson praised Benjamin Banneker, not only for his almanac and ephemeris, but also for his work in surveying for their new federal city and his genius as a mathematician. He happily and highly recommended Banneker's work. Banneker's and Jefferson's letters were included with his almanac, which was successfully published for 5 years and distributed to 4 states, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and Virginia. Benjamin Banneker never married or had children. He sold off portions of his farm and leased parts to farmers. He was most at home in the woods, where he knew every tree and shrub and creature. He enjoyed hobbies like beekeeping and math puzzles. He made just enough to support himself, while he spent most of his time studying astronomy and documenting his findings. He died at 74 years old, a poor man, in October 1806. On the day of Benjamin's burial, as he was being lowered into the grave, his home caught fire and burned to the ground, along with all of his journals and his famed wooden clock. Only one journal survived, along with a few belongings, such as his Bible, a table, and some candlesticks. Benjamin's legacy, however, was not in things, but in the lasting contributions he made to science and in the cause of the enslaved people in America. His obituary described him with fitting words. He was well known in his neighborhood for his quiet and peaceable demeanor, and among scientific men as an astronomer and mathematician. He preferred solitude to mixing with society and devoted the greatest part of his time in reading and contemplation. And to no books was he more attached than the scriptures. Mr. Banneker is a prominent instance to prove that a descendant of Africa is susceptible of as great mental improvement and deep knowledge into the mysteries of nature as that of any other nation.